It's Sunday morning. Time for the great outdoors with Charlie Potter. Brought to you by the all-new Chevy Silverado and ChevyDriveChicago.com on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome to the Great Outdoors Show. Charlie Potter, your host here on WGN Radio. Thank you so much for being with me. I hope you enjoy this show. And next Sunday morning, I'll be talking to you from Alaska. Can't wait to go and to be able to report back on some of the experiences that I have. In particular, I'm going to do a little research on Chinook salmon or king salmon, and I'll do that with a fly rod in my hand, but also talking to scientists about what is the continuing decline of the king runs, which is defying logic because other fish species, sockeyes in particular, and pinks or humpies as they're called, seem to be doing very well. But anyway, that's not for today. That's for next week. Sodbuster. End of last week's show, I said I would talk about it. I'm probably thinking many of you, sodbuster, what is that? Well, it's a term, it's an inside baseball term, much like swamp buster. Back in 1987, when the current genesis of today's farm bill, well, excuse me, 1985 was developed, the U.S. government came up with two terms, sodbuster and swamp buster. And what they said was, if you are going to drain a wetland, then you are not going to be eligible for federal crop subsidies. That's a pretty good discouragement for individuals who are reliant on federal crop support not to drain wetlands. And in the mid-80s, we were in the midst of the worst farm depression since the Depression in the 1930s. And so lots of landowners signed up for sodbuster, which said, you can't break native prairie, virgin prairie, and receive federal crop subsidies. And swamp buster, which said, as I just said a moment ago, you can't drain wetlands. Those two were the absolute basis of what became the 1985 Food Security Act, otherwise known as the Farm Bill for Conservation. Here we are now, almost 40 years later, swamp buster and sod buster have remained in play. They have been enormously beneficial to improving the quality of our water, to keeping soil on the land, not having soils blow away, having wetlands remain. However, in recent weeks or months, actually, there is a group of landowners that have sued the federal government saying that sodbuster violates their private property rights, and it should be illegal. If this were to succeed in court, and likely this is one that goes all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court, so it's not going to happen tomorrow, but it's begun in the pipeline, there would be no protections for virgin prairie left anywhere in America, and it would be exposed to the plow. And this is not a slam on agriculture. It just simply is a fact that virgin prairie on the Dakotas and in Montana and in Kansas and in Nebraska is largely being converted to cropland by farmers, not by people who are breaking it up to build housing developments. The virgin prairie in Illinois, we have less than 0.1% of native prairie left in Illinois. We were the prairie state. We have less than 0.1% of native prairie left in this entire state. It's gone. There are a few nature preserves that have a tiny bit of native prairie, but by and large, it is gone. The only protection we have is the Food Security Act Farm Bill back from 1985 on sodbuster. If they are successful challenging that law, then we're going to lose probably almost all of the native prairie that's left. And when we lose that, we not only have lost a big part of what was here before we came, but we will have contributed enormously to soil erosion, to dust, and to degrading water quality. And I could say for a moment, just take the point of view, yeah, the government has no right to tell you that you can't plow that piece of native prairie and plant, do whatever you want with it, plant corn, plant trees. The government doesn't have any right to tell you can't do that. If I took that point of view, I certainly understand that point of view. And perhaps the government doesn't have the right to do that. But if the government doesn't have the right to do that, then it also certainly doesn't have the requirement to pay you as a landowner crop subsidies to grow crops on the rest of your farm or on that property that you broke, which took away the native prairie. This is going to become extremely complex and very, very supercharged over property rights. And it will have a lot to do with its outcome as to when it actually works its way through the courts and when it gets to the U.S. Supreme Court and what our Congress looks like at the time. In 1985, we had a Congress that was pretty functional. There still was some bipartisanship. Things were able to get done. I don't know if there's any guarantee in 2025. This won't be heard in 2025, but let's just say 2028, by the time it works its way through the courts, that we would have a Congress that is able to agree on any of this. And if we have a Congress, let's just say the courts uphold the right of landowners to plow their native prairie and put it into production, and Congress doesn't say, well, we're going to create some way to either incentivize them not to do that, which is what I would hope would happen, versus you can't do that or there's going to be a penalty. That never works as well. But let's just say Congress doesn't have the ability to do that because it can't function because it's too divided. We could lose, well, we're going to lose millions of acres, and we're going to lose them very quickly. And the impact to ground nesting birds will be colossal. We worry now about the billions of birds that reportedly are gone from our ecosystem. Wait till this takes place. It could be, it'll just be a free fall in bird populations. It will also, because a lot of the native prairie left is short grass prairie, not the tall grass prairie that dominated the Midwest. A lot of that will be in soils that aren't very good, and they're going to blow, and that dust is going to get in the air, and it's going to get in our rivers, it's going to get in our lungs. There can be no benefit to taking native prairie, what's left of it in America, off the land. Not to society. There may be a direct benefit to the landowner who might make some more money in the near term by growing agricultural crops where today there's just grass and grazing fees aren't very high and they can make more money on agricultural crops. But the loss to society will be profound. And I have to believe if we knew in 1900 what we know today about the value of our prairies for carbon sequestration, for soil erosion, for water quality, we would have taken a very different approach. We would have said tens of millions of acres more of grain that is subsidized because often we have too much grain is not needed in the context of the trade-off to our environment. However, we've never come at this from the point of view that a farmer is a businessman or woman, no different than somebody else running their business, and they have to be able to make a profit. So telling someone you can't do that doesn't help them make a profit. If we want landowners, and I've said this for 25 years on the Great Outdoors Show, if we want landowners to do good for society, we have to provide them with the economic incentive to be able to do so. Not to tell them, no, you can't do that because it's bad, but rather, here's how we're going to help you do something good for society and also run a profitable business. That is the mindset that we need, and that's the mindset that in large part we have been lacking. We do too much in regulation and not enough in incentivize and working with our agricultural partners. And without agriculture, we don't have a lot of food in America. And the price of food, if you think it's expensive now, wait till we have a lot less agriculture. On the other hand, the needs of society to maintain the remnants of wetlands that we have and wetlands of prairie, whether it be tall grass prairie, of which there's almost none left, or short grass prairie, of which there still are several million acres. Those remnants need to keep and stay in place. And we need to figure out how we work with the landowner and agriculture to incentivize them to keep those in place. Otherwise, they have no choice. And I don't blame them at all. I'll be back in just a moment with much more on the Great Outdoors Show. And when I do, I'm going to talk about botulism. It's an ugly subject, but it's real. In the meantime, we're going to hear from our longtime sponsors of the Great Outdoors Show, the Northwest Indiana and Chicagoland Chevrolet dealers.
Hiking, camping, and hunting, it's all an adventure in the great outdoors, but nature can be tough. You need to be ready for anything and everything. Chevy Silverado is built to handle the toughest conditions and get you everywhere you want to go worry-free. Silverado's designed to handle the big jobs. It's built for the great outdoors. With over 13,000 pounds of towing capacity and trailering sway control, Silverado can haul the biggest loads on the roughest roads and keep you cool as a Sunday drive. With 8 available cameras and up to 14 different views, it can spot trouble before it gets to you. That's peace of mind. And when you're ready for the backcountry, Chevy Silverado 1500 ZR2 owns the off-road. You name it, we run over it. No wonder it's Motor Trend's 2023 four-wheeler pickup truck of the year. So see your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealer or go to ChevyDriveChicago.com and check out a Chevy Silverado. It's freedom to explore the great outdoors.
It's Charlie Potter and the Great Outdoors on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the Great Outdoors Show. Charlie Potter here on WGN Radio, and I sure hope you're enjoying the show. And I didn't get too deep in the weeds on agriculture, but I fundamentally believe we're in a partnership with agriculture. Farmers across America provide not only us with our food, but the world with our food. And at the same time, we expect those landowners to do things on their land that benefit society, not only through food production, but through improved water quality, air quality, stopping soil erosion. And those elements don't come without a cost. And we've got to figure out a way to do a better job of working with agriculture so that we can keep these high quality areas on the land. Botulism, a horrible subject, but it happens every year. Some years worse than other. A year ago, the botulism outbreak on the Great Salt Lake took tens and tens of thousands of waterfowl out of the population. Botulism is a naturally occurring bacteria. It's been here since the beginning of time. It occurs when areas that are wet dry out in the summer, and they become contaminated with basically stagnant water, little puddles of water, which then breed this horrible, it's a virus, but it goes from bird to bird, and they pick it up and they get it and it gets transferred to another bird. It's a virus. And over the course of a year, hundreds of thousands of birds, not millions of birds, can actually die from this. We know where the bad botulism outbreaks are on this continent, and they're primarily in the American West. The Great Salt Lake is one of the huge areas. The Klamath Basin at the Oregon-Washington border is another huge area. There are areas in Idaho. All of these tend to be big lakes that get drawn down with irrigation in the summer, yet still remain wet with stagnant water, and the birds arrive, and they eat, and they get contaminated, and it's a torturous death. It's not, I swallowed something, I die tomorrow. I die today. No, it lasts for days and it lingers and they lose all their muscle reflexes. And if you've ever been out in a boat, which I have, picking up infected birds with botulism, it'll turn your stomach. It's so sad. And while it's naturally occurring, we can do something about it. The question is, are we going to do something about it? So in the Klamath Basin, there's been a big outbreak of botulism this fall. Believe it or not, about 80% of all waterfowl and wetland-dependent birds who go down the Pacific Flyway go to the Klamath Basin for stopover. 80% that stay in the Pacific Flyway do that. That's a huge percentage that's exposed to botulism or the potential for botulism. And the only way to reduce that impact is to get water into the marshes of the Klamath Basin. Well, the marshes are full in the spring, and as irrigation season goes on throughout the summer, water is drawn down for agricultural purposes to grow all the high-value crops that are grown in California. And come this time of the year, the basins are largely just mud, and the birds find them and they die. We can do something about this, and the Bureau of Land Reclamation and the Bureau of Land Management and the Fish and Wildlife Service and others, Ducks Unlimited is having a big role in this, are working to get water into these marshes in August, so that the botulism outbreak will be reduced. And we ought to cheerlead for them all the way. There are going to be some things that have to be done to make it different in how the water is used. But I don't think we can stand by much longer now that we have the information and watch just the complete die-off of tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of birds in these death traps due to the fact the water has been taken off when the answer to stopping this is very simple. Make sure there's enough water in them when the birds come so that the water is fresh, it's not stagnant, and the birds won't get botulism. We spend hundreds of millions of dollars, billions of dollars every year trying to raise birds, trying to increase the bird populations, trying to protect their habitat. And yet on the other end, we watch the absolute death of horrific numbers of birds when it's not totally avoidable, but it can be largely avoided. The impact can be greatly reduced, and we're not doing it. There are people now who think they know how to do it. We should encourage them to do so, and hopefully a year from now and in the coming years, I won't report so much on the terrible botulism outbreaks that occur. We don't see them here in Illinois. Be very, very rare if we did, but you better be the top on the news item if we did. In the West, it's where bird populations are very high. Unfortunately, this has been a fact of life for too long. Moving from botulism for a second, I want to talk just for a quick moment about something we never talk about, tax evasion. And why would we? After all, we're not in the tax business on the Great Outdoors Show. However, in this case, we might be. There's an estimated $17 million per year in taxes that are being avoided by foreign companies who are selling outdoor recreation products in the United States. Under the Pittman-Robertson Act and the Diggle-Johnson Act, there are taxes on the sale of hunting equipment, firearms, shotgun shells, fishing lines, lures, outdoor equipment. And those taxes are then placed into funds that are used for conservation, and they're very effective funds. But when you buy something online, say through Amazon, and it comes from, say, China directly, there's a loophole. There's no tax charged on that. So the estimate from the Department of Treasury, it seems like a very small number compared to other things, but $17 million a year is being lost in tax receipts that would go towards conservation because there's a loophole in the system. It's up to Congress to fix the loophole. I think the odds of that occurring, well, I wouldn't hold your breath. We obviously, in 2025, have things to do with the tax bill. Maybe that's when it'll get addressed. The conservation community is very much aware of this and is doing all it can to close this loophole, but it will take congressional legislation to figure out how to have a tax paid on foreign manufactured goods coming into the United States, sold over the internet through e-commerce, that are avoiding the Pittman-Robertson and Diggle-Johnson legislation, which set up the taxes to help fund conservation. I don't know if they can figure it out, but now we all at least know about it. It's a problem and likely one that's only going to grow. I thank you so much for listening to the Great Outdoors Show. I hope you've enjoyed it. Next week, I'll be talking to you from Alaska, and I hope I have a lot to report. Have a great week in the great outdoors. This is Charlie Potter on the Outdoor Voice of Chicago and America, 720 WGN.